Hello, I'm John Waters, and I'm supposed to announce there is no smoking in this theater, which I think is one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard of in my life. How can anyone sit through a length of a film, and especially a European film, and not have a cigarette? But don't you wish you had one right now? And I'm telling you, smoke anyway. It gives ushers jobs. And if people didn't smoke, there would be no employment for the youth of today. So once again, no smoking in this theater.
I can't answer them.
Maybe okay, I have an answer. For my money, the the best Arnold sound in any movie.
Is this the movie with the most number of like Arnold grunts and the sound internet soundboard, like the prank call stuff, like all of that, like is that mostly from this movie?
No, I mean, I think that a lot of it is probably from Total Recall as well.
But it's
Total Recall. Yes.
Yeah, when his head is exploding because he's on Mars. Oh man, what a great movie!
This is number two. Probably. This is like Total Recall, and then this. Probably.
It's really saying something though, because
like True Lies, he's not doing that.
But doing a lot of like grunting and shouting in movies.
The grunt to dialogue ratio, I think this is the strongest.
That's definitely true.
Far more grunts than dialogue.
Yeah. It was wild because I haven't seen this movie in a really long time. But then I realized that I think I have the script mostly memorized, and it's like that's not impressive. It's just that there's like a dozen lines in this movie, maybe.
But they're all good.
They're all bangers, absolute bangers. Yeah,
all of them bangers. None of them are my opening quote, but you'll hear. My name is Jason Daphnis. Thank you very much for listening to Trial of. It's a literal roundtable podcast where we talk about movies we saw or people we met at or through the Trial on Cinema in Minneapolis, Minnesota. You can find us on Twitter at Trial of Podcast. Find the Trial on at Trial on Cinema and at trialon.org, where you can buy the tickets and things. You can interact with the social posts and get all cute on Twitter with them. But where you actually want to go is trialon.org. It's where you buy the things. It's where you get tickets. It's where you actually find out about what to do to give the Trial on money, which is something we think you should do. Again, my name is Jason Daphnis. I help make this show. You can find me on Twitter at Nintendoofus. My fear is that my sons will never understand me, and you can find me on Twitter at Nintendoofus.
I'm Cody the Barbarian, and you can find me on Blue Sky at Cody Narvison.
I am the wellspring from which youth flow, but you can call me Harry Mackin, and I'm on Punish Take.
My name is Aaron, and they blow where I live, too. You can find me on Twitter at Harvey Please.
Celia, how do you want to introduce yourself here?
I'm Celia Madison. You should be proud of your body. And I write the Substack Deeper Into Movies.
Thank you so much again, Celia, for joining for this episode. You'll recognize Celia's voice from our episode on Footloose earlier, late last year. I forget exactly what time of year that was. But yes, you'll find links in the show notes to Celia's Substack, to Twitter. Check all of those things out. And the previous episode, I'll link that as well. I'm just mental note for myself. I'll preface this by saying that also in the show notes, you'll find two pieces on Parasphere about this movie by other writers at the Trialon, writing for the Trialon's blog, Parasphere. And that this movie played as part of one of the wonderful series that the Trialon puts on. This one is called Of Swords and Sorcery. It includes this movie, which, of course, by contract, I cannot say the name of before Aaron has introduced it, but also including Samurai Reincarnation, The Beastmaster, Dragon Slayer, and Legend, playing all throughout April. Check it out at trialon.org and at the link in the show notes.
There's also, I just saw when I was there on Friday, they have a shirt for Of Swords and Sorcery, which I'm really excited about.
They're
putting out the shirt for this one. It looks pretty sick, yeah. You would expect.
I'm trying to remember the last Trialon shirt drop was.
I think it was Into the 20th Century Dystopia, right?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Because I've also got that one. Yeah. Pretty soon, my entire wardrobe is just going to be Trialon shirts.
They need to make some Trialon 3 inch shorts for Harry. You can check all that shit out at trialon.org and at links in the show notes. But I need to stop talking because it's time for Aaron to start talking with his patented Aaron Grossman summary, which he always introduces the exact same way.
Thanks, Jason. We are talking, if you cannot have guessed by now, about Conan the Barbarian, 1982 film directed and written by John Milius, based on the character from Robert E. Howard's collection of fantasy, mostly short stories. I think there's one book, and then the rest of it's kind of disparate short stories. Conan the Barbarian film tells the story of a young Sumerian child, Conan, played by Arnold Schwarzenegger, who witnesses his family slaughtered by a band of raiders led by the evil yet charismatic chieftain Tulsa Doom, played here by James Earl Jones. Sold into slavery, Conan spends years as a gladiator until he is eventually freed. Kind of wandering the world, he meets an archer named Subotai, played by Gary Lopez, and a warrior named Valeria, played by Sandal Bergman, during his quest to avenge his family. Avenge? Revenge? What is the difference between avenge and revenge? I don't know.
Revenge, I think, is must be the noun version. Avenge is like the active.
I don't think so. They're separate concepts,
I think it's avenge somebody else. And revenge is on your own behalf.
Oh, interesting. You take revenge, but you do avenge.
So you avenge your father.
Sure.
I'm going to
avenge. You can also take vengeance.
I'm always
should have done this. I do still have another paragraph. The film was a success at the box office, although it saw quite a bit of controversy on release due to the film's violence. It was a bit of a mixed bag critically just due to, you know, people sucking, I guess. The film spawned one sequel and a whole host of knockoff films. Some of which, as previously mentioned, are showing at the Trilon. That's what I got.
That's what you got. But I want to know what Celia's got, because Celia, you put a pin in this one some time ago. You've wanted to talk about this for a little while. What drew you to it? What draws you back to it? And where do you want to start?
This is my classic thing, is to email you 4 months ahead whenever a 1980s movie.
You just understand that we're inherently bad at like scheduling and remembering who we're going to have on. And you leverage that to your own benefit. And I respect that.
I'm like, I just want to do movies that I will watch again and are about masculinity.
There you
and
go.
Dance and performance.
A pair with Footloose, indeed.
A weirdly appropriate pairing, those two
they
films.
They are united in many ways, separate in others, but together in some. So I saw this movie a couple years ago. I think it was probably during the pandemic. I'm obsessed with Arnold Schwarzenegger, which will become clear over the course of this podcast. And I was watching all of his stuff during the pandemic. And I loved this movie. I don't like the sequel and I have not seen the remake. But what is so great to me about this movie is the complete lack of lore, explanation. What are people's names? Where do people come from? It's not explained. It's not even like, oh, there's gray morality. There is no morality. It's just a story of conquering and being conquered. I think that's what distinguishes this from some of the other in this genre that really try to go for a more of a high fantasy thing where there's class systems and they're explaining how the world works. This does not have any sort of backing system to clarify where these people come from besides Conan's limited biography. Where are they going? There's camels. No one knows.
Over the mountains.
Why are they running instead of just walking? It's got to spend so much more energy to run everywhere. I mean, it's cute. It's really cute that they run everywhere, that he runs everywhere with his friend Subotai. But, like, why? It's just... Anyway.
You see him try to ride a camel? I saw him try to
fucking deck that camel.
That is a legendary scene when he's drunk and he punches a camel in the face.
I will say that I think that's like a pretty good like kind of starting off point. I think that like this film is very interesting as it is to my understanding, I'm not a Conan the Barbarian expert, but to my understanding, it is a fairly good adaptation of this character. I believe that the kind of backstory is changed around to kind of add a little more depth there. I think in the original short stories, the backstory is mostly like alluded to, where in here it's this kind of, origin story and we see him kind of grow up and whatnot. I think that this as like a fantasy story is really interesting because it is an adaptation of a collection of stories that existed before the current understanding of what fantasy is.
Yes, that's
was
huge.
Cemented. Right. These stories were written before Lord of the Rings, right, which is like the big one. They were written before tabletop gaming and Dungeons and Dragons, like really cemented what all of these things are. Right. And so there is this almost like mythological way that this film treats those kind of concepts. Like, I think the point about like there not being a map is like very accurate. Right. Like, I'm sure that there were appendices and maps and like, lore explainer bits and all the short stories. For the most part, like, this is not concerned with doing the Lord of the Rings thing, right? This is concerned with doing something different that is kind of striking, I think, in a weird way. And so I think that, like, Harry, you want to take it from here? You can't.
Oh, no, no. I just, you're really speaking my language right now, right? Because, like, I think specifically the fact that this is, like, not Judeo-Christian bullshit, like, fantasy makes it so fucking refreshing, right? And, like, it's actually, like, it is an appropriate thematic adaptation of the Conan the Barbarian stories in that, like, it doesn't have, like, a black and white or any morality, like Celia said, but, like, it does have a very strong theme, right? Which is, but it's about, like, the, this sort of like unabashed adoration for this barbarian lifestyle and all that it represents, right? Like this living as free and as hard as you can and defying both false and true idols. And it's a very classical fantasy in a way that I think like exactly what you said, Aaron, like the first time I saw this movie, I was not like as sort of like critical as I am now. And I didn't like it that much because I was expecting like a traditional Arnold action movie. And instead I got this like languid, sort of moody, epic, like long movie, right? I mean, it feels like fucking Last of the Mohicans at some point, right? Where it's like, there are just, it's scenes that are like, they take like 20 minutes to set up because the entire point is just like the imagery that we're walking away with. But having seen it now, and especially like, I think that it's so apt to compare it to traditional or what has come to be traditional fantasy because it is so refreshing compared to that, right? Because it's so much less interested in sort of like upholding and defending or running interference for what are essentially pretty traditional, pretty conservative like ideas and values that are sort of like dressed up in fantasy, you know, like in Lord of the Rings or something like the Chronicles of Narnia, even more so. And it's much more interested in doing something like that I think is legitimately subversive, right? Which is that like, this is like an anti-theist movie and it's an anti, sort of like authoritarian movie on basically a, like anti all authority and anti the idea of like there being any sort of like higher prescriptive power, including morality itself, that can tell people what to do. And like, I think I see even more than the violence why that might have rubbed some people the wrong way, right? Like, this is a movie that is like unabashedly about like a dude who's not a, like, this is, Conan is not a fantasy protagonist in the sense that we know, right? He's not Frodo Baggins. Like, he's a dude who is like, he comes from a legacy of conquest and he continues that legacy of conquest, and is like better at it than everybody else. And like, that is not something that the movie is interested in apologizing for or explaining away in a way that I think feels like so refreshing compared to, the legacy of movies like this that followed it.
Yes, but also I think that like you are right, and that this is not like in line with the kind of fantasy like Christian conservatism, you know, of like Lord of the Rings or like Narnia or something like
but
that.
But it is fantastic. Very yes.
Yes, I mean,
oh, that's the oh thing, yeah, yeah. Like, no, it.
John Milius is like, you know, I mean, that's a fun.
I mean, like Disco Disco Elysium has a whole joke about how Conan the Barbarian like created like fascist aesthetics. Yeah,
right. Exactly. Right. Like, this is, you know, John Milius, a very fun Wikipedia skim. If you're not too familiar with his stuff, very talented guy in a lot of respects. Mm-hmm. The thing I learned recently from preparing for this episode, his daughter apparently was the director of one of the like 2020 like pro Trump conspiracy documentaries, like the case for the president or whatever, you know, one of those.
He's
bottom of the streaming pile.
The nice thing you can say about John Milius is he's like a Hollywood conservative, which is that like maybe he doesn't actually know what conservatism is. He just kind of like wants that aesthetic.
Well, he like
and
hates,
is also a psychopath. But
yeah, he's like so far, like he is like a uber libertarian, like literally any form of power is bad. Any structure of power is bad. Which, you know, I think, politics aside, I think represents itself in a film with, I think, pretty striking imagery, right? I think that like, you know, for better or worse, this is a film that like kind of utilizes that sort of ideology in maybe the best possible fashion. but maybe a little bit too in the weeds. So apologies.
No,
but
I mean,
just yes, it is conservative. Just mm-hmm.
I'm super excited to talk about John Milius. Even. Yeah, for sure.
I see what you're saying. We have like this centering idea of, I liked how Celia put it at the beginning, the like conquering and being conquered is really like the driving force of the narrative of the plot. There's Harry, you intimated that like it's not really interested in much more in like a deep character study. It's not really interested in many of the different, like if it has a subversive element, it is that Conan himself would defy his own gods if they won't lend him power to succeed, if they won't lend him power to again conquer. Like literally has that scene where he's just talking to Crom and he's like, and if you won't give me what I want, the hell with you. Like
the hell with you. Legendary Arnold Blunt.
Like, but it's like every, the thing that I, having zero mileage, and I mean zero mileage with Conan, with the like original stories from the, you know, teens and 20s, with the movie, I literally have never been exposed to any part of it beyond just, you know, the posters basically and the memes. Having no background there at all was a fun way to start this movie, because I had this sort of like, he has like this low, inciting incident, his family is killed, and he will like slowly rise to become like the hero of either, you know, the people that he sought to protect, or, you know, just the ravager of other, armies and peoples. And it complicates that somewhat near the beginning in ways that I don't think directly contrast with what you're all saying about like this soul drive to conquer, and like the very simplicity, the directness, the even conservatism of the story here. But like there are elements near the beginning, specifically like his transition from a slave on the Wheel of Pain, which again, the blank of blank is just such a perfect naming convention for so many things. The tree he gets crucified on is the tree of agony or something. It just like swap in bad adjective. Anywhere.
Also, that wheel, that couldn't have been a full body workout. How did he get glutes that
because,
toned?
Because he
from...
did it straight without eating and without sleeping, sure, without drinking for like 15 years, apparently. Right. But like the twisting there, the thing that like sort of added an intrigue to me and sort of made me think differently about the character as the movie was going on was there's that, and it's very specific. Tell me if I'm like just pulling a grain out and saying it's a whole meal here, but he has a moment where he is thrown into the pits with other fighters and brought to, he has an audience. And I think Mako's VO, by the way, Mako, big wet, you know, crying eyes emoji, but Mako's OVO explains that like he finally had an audience and he sort of recognized his worth at like it, he's recognized his worth, recognizing his worth as a slave, as a block of muscle, but he's recognizing his worth. He has an audience for the first time, and that's sort of where he builds himself. He defines himself by that, not by, again, like the vengeance or revenge or whatever we want to say that he necessarily like that drives him to actually go and kill Thulsa Doom, but by like, that is his inciting thing, is to have people looking at him, watching him, recognizing himself through sort of the other and his impact on it. I don't know if that like complicates in a meaningful way the character's drive or where the story's really going, but it made me think differently by the time that we get to the end where he's got,
ooh,
people,
I really
he's got
like that,
party
Jason.
Of friends. He's got his, you know, many, he's interrupting, you know, all sorts of mechanistic plots by the evil bad guys. And it's because it, at some level, he knows that somebody's watching. He knows that he has like a persona to keep up. Maybe whole meal out of a grain there, but I feel like that does characterize way more than it's way more character, I guess, than I thought I was going to get from this. Knowing only like, basically I just finished reading Wolf and White Van Harry for the first time, and he references Conan the Barbarian a lot in that.
Yeah, like I thought about that section a whole lot while watching this.
This icon of fascist power. And I'm like, well, of course, so this movie is going to have at least parts of that. And it does. I don't know. There's a lot to speak to here. And I imagine I've probably opened up a few different rivulets that we may want to go down, or maybe not. But I'll hand up the mic to, Cody, because he's had his hand up for a long time. Cody.
No, I'm still mulling over your use of rivulets. First and foremost, you said it, not me. So can't cross off the bingo. Or actually, we can cross off the bingo card space that exists out there somewhere. First and foremost, I interpreted the wheel sort of as like a rowing machine type workout where it kind of taps into a little bit of everything. He's stopping to eat maybe like once a year. Sure, he could look like Arnold by the end of it.
It rules that all the other slaves disappear and eventually he's the only guy pushing the wheel, but he's still pushing the wheel because he's getting stronger. Oh, man, great visual.
Is that the most like – what's the term in like corporate America with like a person you cannot replace? You know what I mean? Who's like, is like, this is the only guy that knows to log into our database. You know what I mean? Like Arnold is the, we used to have seven guys doing this fucking job. Now we just have Arnold.
He's the champion, the SME for it.
Give him the
it.
PTO he needs.
I love that
make
they
make sure you're doing one-on-ones with him.
They eventually let him go just because they're like kind of getting scared of him. They're like, I don't know. You're like too good at this shit.
He's
man.
Too
like,
bad.
Yeah.
Right. Management looked away for a second. They see all those guys gone. It's like, oh, did Arnold eat those guys? Like, do we have to still have to pay salary? It's a whole complicated thing. But kind of like Jason, I feel like the curse of coming into this with certain expectations tethered to like fantasy genre or just like the Arnie of it all. This was my second time seeing it. I watched it for the first time.
I was a little slow on the draw there, but I'll get it next time.
No, that's okay. I feel like whenever somebody utters a syllable of that man's name, might be, I don't know, it's tough to coordinate. You're riding the wheels of steel. I'll let you determine that, Jason. But yeah, coming into this, like a year ago, I watched it. It was on Netflix or whatever. And I think I was trying to make too much sense of the macro instead of looking at the things under this particular umbrella. Because like, as it's been characterized, this movie is certainly not interested in like getting you caught up to speed in a way that is like easy or digestible or whatever. But I still wanted to like make sense of all that. And that might be where like some of my hangups were. But the stretch that really just like taking it beat by beat, I don't know why anybody would be listening to this without having first seen the movie. But just like in case that is the case, the scene Jason was talking about with Arnie in the pit, somewhat clear, maybe I'm projecting, but like this movie maybe not having, because it was still like relatively ish early in Arnie's Arnieography. I was just hoping for another button push. Thank you. It's clear that he is the physical presence to be good in combat, but there maybe they haven't quite cracked it yet. You know what I mean? Like there are a lot of grunts. The actual fighting doesn't look amazing, but just like that is our first kind of taste of it. Arnie runs away, hides atop. Okay, you don't actually.
All right.
You don't want to. Conan hides atop fucking penis rock, this oddly shaped boulder, finds a sword, has sex with a demon. You're just like going down the line. He gets high with his new buddy 5 minutes later and punches out a camel. And they come across a big snake during an elaborate like heist sequence. And that's like a 20-30 minute block of the movie that like amongst everything else, amongst the sequences that are like deceptively meditative. Like I think we probably said on mic that like there aren't a ton of lines in this movie. There are notably a lot of sequence. We're just taking in the texture of the live spaces we're in. I think everybody's point that makes it feel starkly different from other like fantastically inclined, like genre entries that we've come to know since this movie. And so, it allowed me the opportunity to focus on how, like, if I were a kid watching this movie, James Earl Jones staring down the lens and wordlessly decapitating a woman would have scared the shit out of me. And like, that was also what I was trying to do while watching this is like decide, like, and folks here who love it and who have seen it previously, like, trying to think, like, oh, is this something that they've grown up with or they've like trended to recently? And like, trying to make sense of where this all fits into like my understanding of like Milius works, which I haven't seen a lot of, I haven't seen a lot of his movies. I was kind of poking through his filmography as well. Or like, where does this fit in? I'm not going to say his name, but it rhymes with Barney canon, fantasy genre films. I don't know. So I'm still kicking that around. I came away much more positively about it this time around. Like I think even just like the early goings of this discussion here, this is all making a lot more sense. And it's going to make even more sense when Harry hits us with his Arnold impression. Harry?
That was it. You just heard it.
Pretty
that
good.
wasn't the soundboard. That
strangely
was just
completely in mono.
Sounds directly from the film. I mean, yeah. Very talented guy here.
Thank you. I've always said that about my Arnie impression.
I really will stop. I apologize.
Okay, thank you. I think that like I really liked where Jason and Cody took this, because I really love like Conan's relationship to himself and the director's relationship to Conan as an icon in this movie, which is why like this is such a perfect sort of like Ur John Milius movie. It's like the reason why this movie is as fascistic and as inspirational to fascists as it is also like kind of unfortunately what makes it so charming and compelling to me, right? Which is just that like there is like a real like childish romanticism of the idea of a man who can live this way, right? Like you get the impression that like John Milius desperately wants to be Conan the Barbarian. Like he thinks that Conan the Barbarian is like the ultimate manifestation of masculinity and manhood. And like, this is what it is to be a person. And like, you can totally see that like the reason why fascists adopted this like storyline is because they all think of themselves this way, right? It's like, oh, in a world where like there aren't any rules and like nobody's holding me back, this is who I would be. I would be like this barrel chested, like man's man, totally vital. Like I would take down everybody and everybody would want to sleep with me. And like, there it is. And it's like, yes, that it's frustrating because it's such a simplistic worldview, but like there is something about in this movie, the total commitment to this idea of like this self-reflexive mythologization of self as like ultimate man-man and commitment to living that way. That is sort of like, it's really charming in its own way, right? Like just this idea that like, oh, like I get it. Like John Milius is in love with this man. Like it's a really like charged relationship with masculinity and with this idea of like, oh, somebody who can like completely commit to the sort of like warrior ethic of freedom and conquest and adventure, right? And it's like you can see it's an unbelievably simplistic thing, but like when it is committed to with the like the imagery that this movie has going for it and with the epic scale and scope and genre trappings, it like it becomes something that is compelling, right? That is sort of like deeply romantic in a way that feels substantive, maybe in ways that are unfortunate, right? Because of the way that this movie has been sort of adopted and this character has been adopted. But you can see the sort of like id appeal of it, right? Just this idea of sort of like simplicity above all else and like the sort of like ego of it all being so all-encompassing, right? Just a total sort of like shrine to the self.
Yeah, is that, I'm curious, because what we're all talking about, like, you know, I brought up the idea of like having an audience and having these people who you know, like he recognizes himself and his worth through the other, and you're talking about his ego. I'm curious, Celia, because you sort of kicked us off with a conversation about how it is like very single-mindedly about a thing, at least visually and on the page, a single thing. Are these tied to the sort of feelings that you've got about the movie and its directness and simplicity? Are we complicating it beyond what you think it needs to be? Where are you at with this?
No, I love that. I think I forgot that it opens with this narration framing Conan as this folk hero that we just are hearing about. And I think the part where it's almost like he is self-actualizing by realizing that he has worth and importance. I was trying to think of another movie where this happens to a man, and I'm not sure if it exactly happens in the same way where it's like, oh, he realizes he has worth, and how just directly that's delivered. It's almost like the opposite of ego death, where he realizes that he is a person and is like discovering intelligence as a human.
And it's like, it's a movie about exulting in that, right? About like, holy shit, like I'm a person, I have an ego, like that's better than anything.
Yeah, it is kind of like Ayn Randy of like, oh, I've arrived at this through my mind. I feel like the other interesting part of this movie that we're talking about with like John Milius being in love with him, I don't know if Robert E. Howard, who wrote the original Conan books, was in love with him, but he was an amateur boxer. I think part of what frames Robert E. Howard's story ultimately is that he died of suicide very young and kind of had just a very sad and strange life, despite creating this extremely successful and, iconic character that he wrote a lot of stories for in a relatively short time. But this is like, I think for every like four Arnold should I even say his name? Every like 4 AS movies.
It. I meant it. I'm There's not gonna.
There's some kind of gay panic scene. So it's in this. It happens in Eraser. There's a gay bar scene in Terminator. I think there's one in Red Heat where he goes into, there's like a bathhouse scene.
It's the first scene. It's the only good scene in Red Heat. Yeah.
Yeah. And it is this, like, this lampshading moment of like, we need to acknowledge that this man's body is inherently homoerotic and that we love to look at it. I guess this is also what Predator is about. And we also need to make it very clear that we're not looking at it in that way. We want to be this man. We don't want to be with this man.
Yeah, it's always
Raw
counter.
Yeah, it might happen in Raw Deal too. It happens in all of them. It's like you have to say something. Otherwise, it's too obviously gay to be obsessed with this oily Austrian man who barely speaks and is like, gorgeous.
Right. Totally. And we have this like really complicated relationship on a metatextual level with Arnold because that's also been so much a part of his brand. Like ever since Pumping Iron, like there was this idea that like, oh, he's like the ultimate homoerotic sex symbol, but also like dudes love him and like, but it's not gay, bro. Like for real. Sort of like thing going on. So like they, I think all of Arnold's movies are about trying to thread that line and trying to sort of like incorporate homoeroticism into contemporary pop culture without it being homoeroticism. It's fascinating.
Yeah. And like, how long can you work on your body and sculpt it before it just becomes an act of like complete narcissism and that in itself being read as non-masculine because it's so image focused.
I feel like we're beyond the scope of just this movie, but I like that we've sort of blown it out to largely, you know, bodybuilding culture and movies like this.
Oh, I could talk about Arnold Schwarzenegger forever. He's a fascinating fucking individual.
You've talked before about how I think it was you took a whole summer or maybe a whole year just to watch Arnie movies when we talked about Total Recall and maybe a couple other Arnie movies on this podcast. But it is really like it's making wonder like the fact, Celia, that you're, and I'm sure there are examples, but none that immediately come to mind of movies where, yes, like a male character overtly like quote unquote traditionally masculine has that realization that like that has worth, that is like I am as a self, as a version of the self, I am value. I'm like you said, the opposite of ego death. And what we're, I mean, indirectly addressing is like, it seems like we're saying that either falls on like, I guess the way that that manifests, the path that that takes is either like directly fascist and fascist leaning or it's gay as hell. And it's like, it's unfortunate that it threads one or the other of those needles usually. And it's, you know, with 40 years of retrospect, easy to look back at the movie and say, well, this is either, you know, inspirational for a whole generation of fascist aesthetic, or it's like secretly very homoerotic. But I just feel like there's a conversation there to be had. I don't know how deep we want to get into it, but a conversation there to be had about like this realization of a man's worth, of a person's worth for the things that they are in this very traditionally masculine, hyper masculine, we'll say, way, is either like opted to a fascist end or is like admitted, like if it wasn't gay it'd be fascist, if it wasn't fascist it'd be gay. It seems to be like the
you're thinking about Mishima, aren't you?
I'm thinking so hard about Yukio Mishima. Again, I read Temple of the Golden Pavilion and then I read Wolf in White Van and it's like, guys, there's something wrong with that boy.
and what's so fascinating about that is that like it's a deeply liberatory story, right? It's a movie about like Celia said, like it's a man who self-actualizes through his ego and decides he's not taking shit from anybody, right? And the movie is ultimately about that. It's about like stand in your truth and know that there are no higher truths. I mean, one of my favorite things about this movie is that it's, and one of my favorite things about this idea of fantasy in general is that like it's not that James Earl Jones's character is not a god magician. Like the man can legitimately turn into a snake. He legitimately has terrifying powers. Mm-hmm, like there are spirits that exist in this world. Crom is a deity that enacts like physical like manifestations upon Earth. That just doesn't fucking matter. It's like it doesn't matter if God is real or God isn't real. Whether or not God is real, he is not better than you. is the point of this movie. And like there's something like so like genuinely like liberating about that idea, right? And like there is something like it's unfortunate, right? Because like then I think that sort of like kernel of ego liberation is where you go in either direction, like you were talking about, Jason, where it's like I think that like where people go from there is Conan becomes this power fantasy where it's like, oh, actually, like I want to liberate myself for the purposes of conquering and dominating others. And that becomes the power fantasy when in fact there is another fantasy here, right? Like, and I'm not saying that like conservatives are misinterpreting Conan or anything. Like unfortunately, I don't think that's true. I think that this is a fascist sort of like idea, but, like I think that like the thing that is actually sort of driving what makes this movie compelling, to me and what brings it staying power is that idea of sort of like this idea that you don't need to bow to any authority, that nobody knows better, whether it be gods or cultists or heteronormativity, right? And like you can and should live in your truth utterly. And refuse to accept or acquiesce to any sort of like anybody that would try to take that from you. It's just, I think where it goes from there that becomes sticky, right? Because then it of course contradicts itself immediately where it's like, but once you do that, like, please feel free to, conquer other people who have lesser wills than you because, you know, because in the conservative sort of Ayn Randian viewpoint, only people who are capable of this sort of like, total ego subsummation are like real people who are like worthy of that, which is a whole like horrible thing, right? But I think that like something like this is like I think there's something there about how anybody could do this that makes it a little bit more compelling to me.
Yeah. I think it's interesting to consider this movie as like maybe not reaction to, but like a movement beyond the, you know, I'm thinking of the swords and sorcery swashbuckling versions of movies like this that came before, like the, you know, Jason and the Argonauts and the Sinbad the Sailor and all those kinds of movies that just have this restraint about them where every character is somehow real. I mean, big old problematic warning on pretty much all of those movies that there's behavior and depictions that are obviously out of step with what the world should really be. But in their encapsulated way, like they rein in aspects of a character that will that sort of like normalize them to a time or like make them empathetic. And this movie still does that. It seems to want like to have its cake about he is a barbarian, he will conquer, he knows violence, he has perfected the male form to destroy and to pillage and conquer, and yet he like there's scenes early on where while he's still a slave, he is bred with the finest stock, as they say. And like, it's a goofy little scene, but there's an attempt to humanize. There's an attempt to like, oh, he has an inherent respect for other people, for like people who are maybe less able-bodied than him, in that he like carefully puts a little blanket on the nude woman who's been brought to like, mate with
him. He'd been reading those philosophy scrolls. Exactly. There was some bell hooks in there.
But yeah. It's like some bell hooks. He's got like, I don't know how to parse what we're saying about his like this sort of like complete freedom and liberation of himself versus like, oh, we've obviously reined in aspects of this character to make him not seem completely and totally utterly like vile to civilized, quote unquote, civilized society tastes. You know, like he does behead the great evil magician. He does, you know, murder and slaughter, you know, endlessly. He really commits heinous acts, but always with like this moral compass guiding thing. And I guess that's where it becomes like a more pointed statement rather than just like, I don't know. We talked about Mandy with Dan Nagin on this podcast a couple of years ago. And there was a part of the conversation where we're like, we talked about how it was very nice that it was just reveling in this sort of, like Harry put it earlier, like this anti-theist, this like being as like as gross and as, you know, vile as you can be, and just having that liberation and freedom. And I don't feel like that is brought entirely into this movie. It's like tempered by some of the shape of the movie. Like Harry said, it's moodier, it's longer, it's somewhat less like, it's no less over the top, but it's somewhat less, somewhat more reined in. It's less like, you know, I guess I don't know exactly how to say it, but there's some flattening there of some of those more like some sanding down of some of what I would assume the character is. And I don't know how that makes us feel differently. I guess, Celia, having the desire to talk about this movie, did you feel any of that with the character being like maybe reining in some of those aspects of the character to make him more palatable or make him more seem more affable and friendly? Or was it 100% Arnie that did that for you?
I don't think he's doing a lot of acting in this movie. So I was looking at some of the original short stories, which I found completely impenetrable. I don't know if anyone's tried to look at them. Very like that kind of Edgar Rice Burroughs era of like pulp science. I can read the first sentence and you can tell me what you think about this.
Please.
Because I pulled it up. At a court festival, Nabonidus, the red priest, who was the real ruler of the city, touched Murillo, the young aristocrat, courteously on the arm. That's how the story starts. Banger. And this would have been like just in a pulp magazine. So I was like, I'm already way in over my head. But the character does have these kind of chivalric aspects. He's not like a knight. There's not like that kind of code associated with him, but he does have, he is meant to be a character that we can sympathize and understand. So he rescues women. He doesn't like to fight or brutalize women. He's a lot smarter and funnier in the stories apparently than he is in the book and in the movie. I think the movie does a very good job of, I don't need to hear about Nabonidus, the red priest, and the city, the supposed city. That kind of stuff is, that would be a lot to put in the movie. And so I think simplifying the character into having this dubious ethical code, I do think probably part of it, if we wanted to psychoanalyze the character, there is probably some connection to the death of seeing the brutal death of his mother. He's raised in what appears to be, he grows up in this village that feels like it has a little bit more of a community bond, at least than would be available on the Wheel of Pain with his fellow orphans. The beginning reminded me a little bit of The Northman, the Robert Eggers movie from a couple years ago, which I don't really like that movie very much.
I didn't like that movie.
Yeah. And I think that movie could take another line from this one. But I think that I think that they have to distinguish Conan for some reason as being different from Thulsa Doom.
Right, right.
Or being different from these other people. And I feel like I remembered the ending. So I remembered it ending with him on the throne. I remembered it being him taking over the throne from Thulsa Doom. But that is not what happens. He burns down the kingdom.
He burns it down, yep.
Burns it down, which...
He burns down a stone temple.
What is yeah. Right? I said he like he. It's not shot put,
dude.
Like
it's so Discus funny.
Throws it.
Yeah.
Yes.
I kept waiting for it just like to not catch on fire, and just he's just like, oh shit! Like
it goes up there. A while. You expect it to go up, and then you're like, well, this is stone. And there's all these parts where you're like, he is not making the smartest decision if his choices were based on acquiring power or making the most logical choice. This man has the power to live 1,000 years and shapeshift. Why would you kill him? Why would you not learn something from it? He has this thousands of subjects that Conan could have easily made his, and he doesn't do that. So I think there probably is this idea of like this higher, he has this higher mind than everybody around him, where he has a sense of good, even though other people don't. He has a sense of what's correct and not correct, even though, like I said, I don't think there's really like a moral code, because it's all based on his own sense. I mean, he punches a camel. Like, this guy is not like operating on a biblical do no harm kind of basis. But I do think that this is part of his sexual self-actualization, Freudian slip,
yeah.
His self-actualization and the idea of his ego being better and superior to the people around him is that he does have this kind of moral guidance that seems very foreign to his fellow thieves and travelers.
Mm-hmm. Quick
plug. And it's, go ahead.
I just want to quickly plug a piece because it speaks pretty specifically to this from Perisphere. It was written by, I believe the name is Chris Rebaturis. Check it out at Fathers True and False in Conan the Barbarian. Just little mini plug at Perisphere. Chris Rebaturis wrote a little bit about that and how
nice.
Conan ingests and doesn't sort of advice of male figures in his life. Anyway.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's what's fascinating about Thulsa Doom, right, is that he is a legitimate foil for Conan, because they're kind of going about the same thing in like inverse or parallel ways, right, where it's like they're both people who believe in will above all else, right? And it's like Conan's moral authority is basically like Conan can do what Conan wants because Conan has the will to see it through, right? And like that is the great liberation of this movie, is this idea that like no matter where you come from, no matter who you are, if you have like if you have the will, the power, the sort of Nietzschean spirit to like self-actualize and demand the existence of yourself, demand the existence of your ego, then like you can like overcome. It's just that like then it gets involved with like what do you do with that? And it turns out that like this movie's answer is that like I, like it's not that Conan is smarter and that he's like this weird like primitivist return guy. It's like that's one and the same, right? That like really like the ultimate like truth of this like this world is that like to live as Conan, to be primitive, to like not seek power but only to seek self-glorification and like the sort of like the power of the self is the right way, right? Like not to necessarily manipulate others or take sort of like false power from other people, but just to uplift the self. And that's what differentiates him from Thulsa Doom, right? Is that Doom is about like creating this political power, whereas Conan is about like creating what is real power, right? The Riddle of Steel is the self, right? It's like it's about making you stronger, well, not necessarily.
Thulsa Doom is like a direct subversion of that, where he's like, real power exactly. is not steel; it is the flesh. Like
it's flesh, it right?
Control yep. over that. Yeah. I didn't mean to cut you off there. Just as a hype man, like yeah,
no, yeah, that's you're, that's you're exactly right, right? Like that's why Thulsa Doom is such a good foil for Conan, because they right. represent like two opposite ends of this idea of what will is and how you use it. And Conan ends up victorious because he sees through the sort of like power of suggestion that Thulsa Doom has, because he doesn't need it, right? Because he can mm-hmm. trust in himself and his body and his self-reliance. And obviously everything I'm saying is like why this became such a giant like masculine sort of like rallying cry, right? Because it's like in the end, like everybody wants to be totally self-reliant. They want to be Conan the Barbarian. They want no truth to be higher than the truth of their steel, right? Than the truth of their body. There's that legendary line at the very beginning where it's like, trust no one, but you can trust this. And he shows him the sword and it's like, fuck yeah. You know, it's like, it's a perfect fantasy, but like you can, it's wild, right? This is like one of the like rare, truly exceptionally persuasive fascist like fictions, because it's like you can see how this leads to so much terrible shit, but you can also see the appeal on some like ideological level or some like not even ideology but some like impulsive level,
some emotional like yeah. I mean, Harry is about to issue a retracting my previous statement, you absolutely do not gotta hand it to him type phrasing, but but yeah, I mean, like I think we're on the same level there. It's making me think about Thulsa Doom as a character. Like, one, just the visual shock, had no idea that James Earl Jones was in this movie, did not Google it, did not look at the letterbox, just put it on my watch list. I mean, the visual shock alone of him in the like 2011 Tumblr micro bangs with the really long, oh my good God, it's such a good effect. And like it's
also like perfect casting, because like it's crazy to make James Earl Jones act opposite Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yes,
like he's so good and Arnold Schwarzenegger is so bad, and it's like, oh my God, it's like amazing that like it works so well for those characters.
That's exactly why I want to bring it up as a discussion point distinctly, is because we're building these like comparisons between, you know, Conan's moral code such as it is, and like what he is, how he becomes who he becomes, and sort of like what shaped him. And then we get this character that is opposite him in almost every respect, like measured. He's not much of a like physically imposing figure. He looks very goofy with his hair. Like, I think there was an intent there directorially, performance wise. Like, honestly, James Earl Jones is the only person in this movie you can see taking it seriously. He deserved a fucking BAFTA and an Academy Award for this shit. But like he is directly antithetical in so many ways to Conan as a character and as a figure and on screen, that I just like, I want to dig into that a little bit. I guess Cody, you, I'm assuming that you had a good time watching James Earl Jones act opposite Arnie Schwarzenegger. What were some of the ways that you saw him like cast us opposite the character and sort of like playing to that maybe strange comparison specifically?
I think a lot of it had to do with how James Earl Jones was framed. And I don't know if that's from like the filmmaker sense of like what we can do with these two actors, one who's more established and one who isn't. But like going back to that decapitation scene, like the movie is kind of bookended with like intense, like James Earl Jones in one of the worst wigs imaginable, like staring down the lens of the camera and just doing like elite eye acting, like it was kind of lost in me the first time I saw this movie. But him, I should actually get the name. No, you know what? Fuck it. James Earl Jones. James Earl Jones staring down Conan's mother and just like trying to communicate something. Like he's very wide eyed, and then like he does like the squints. Like there's something very like minute but manic about what he's doing. And like he has a similar sort of stare down with the end. And definitely correct me if I'm wrong. I don't recall Conan. I don't want to incur the wrath of the button, but Conan's like wasn't staring down the lens in the same sort of way, or at least like he didn't command like, this is my fucking face. This is all you're seeing. And like, I cannot command the space in the same sort of way that James Earl Jones can. So like from a technical standpoint, and understandably, like when you have the capacity to frame Conan's entire body and like the rewards that you reap when you do so, like why wouldn't you do that? You're just maximizing the parts you have at your disposal. So just like from a technical level, like, and it's a win-win because like you get Conan's body, you get James Earl Jones, you know, really giving a damn, putting everything he can into what could otherwise be like a toss to side. And it does play favorably into the Arnie sort of filmography. Like, I mean, thinking about Eraser, he's acting opposite James Caan, and he's just like, James Caan is acting circles around him. That's far from the only example, but it does.
I always forget that James Caan is in that fucking movie, dude. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like certainly not a coincidence, probably, that they landed upon something like that. We need some gravitas to like anchor us in this a little bit and like play off of that duality. Some movies are more successful with that than others. I think it was probably pretty successful here, but I don't know whether that's a James Earl Jones spinoff that you wanted to latch onto here, or if that was something else. That's at least what I saw from like a technical point of just like, this movie is conscious of like what it has and it kind of adjusts appropriately.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I love that it's James Earl Jones specifically. I love that like Thulsa Doom, he represents like this suggestion of all higher truths, right? This idea that like, oh, Thulsa Doom, they say he's lived 1,000 years. They say he knows everything. They say he can be everywhere, right? Like he's this legendary figure who has these godlike powers and who through his will alone can make his will manifest in reality, right? Like that's what the stare down is, right? Like he gets this woman to put down her sword and accept her death through nothing but his will alone. Like made manifest. And like then Conan transcends that, right? It's like it's a rejection of this idea that there is anything higher than you, that like then there is like this idea that like, oh, there are other people out there who know things that you don't know, and there are things to learn from other people, and there are legitimate wisdom to be out there to be found that doesn't already exist in your body and the strength of your steel.
Yeah,
and it's like, and the answer is no, there's not. Like, the answer is like, fuck off, nerd, right? It's like, Thulsa Doom is like the nerd in college, and like, Conan is the big jock who's sort of like, yeah, you might know more than me, but guess what? Like, I just cut your head off, bitch, so like, what up?
It's like me and Aaron in college.
yeah, exactly. And, you know, like I said, I think that like, making that parallel, with a more established actor who can really like represent the power of suggestion and will, right? Like you look at James Earl Jones in this movie and you do think like, oh, like this is the only guy who knows what the fuck's going on. Like this is the only guy who's playing on like any sort of level. Like he is actually like making plans. He's got a cult going. He's got all of that. Like Conan is not his equal. Conan is not on his level at all. And that's the point, right? The point is like you don't have to be on this level. You have to be on like Conan's level. You have to like love yourself and don't take anybody's shit. And, you know, cut the head off the snake.
For real. Like, it does not serve you.
Yeah, I mean, the ending carries Harry's line of, I am the wellspring from which you flow. I had to double check that I wrote this down correctly, because I was like, wait, this is actually a very insane thing that he says. But I am the wellspring from which you flow, of course. But that when I am gone, you will have never been. And that also just feels like such a sharp reflection of, like, the movie's ethos, obviously. But then also, I feel like there is something there about Arnold representing this next generation of movie. And like this next generation of body almost. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm reading too much into this, but no. This feels like the beginning of an era where they look like action figures. Like, you have these men who don't seem at all like they could exist in the real world. I'm looking at the cover of the Conan comic, and Arnold is bigger than this drawing. Like, this guy looks small in comparison.
It turns out when you live in like a largely like nomadic culture that like it runs around all day and like has very like not varied nutrition, and like you spend all your time like exercising and like foraging and whatnot, you don't actually look like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Like Arnold looks like Arnold because he has carefully crafted his body over the course of many decades, literally
spending eight hours
a day in the gym.
If you lived like Conan's character is supposed to have lived, you would look like that meme of like how every bartender throughout history has just had the same kind face and like, you know, portly bot. Like, you would look like that. That's just the physique that you end up with.
It's the perfect encapsulation of the Arnold persona, right? This guy who, like, he seems to suggest this sort of, like, Reaganism return to sort of classical masculinity, but is, in fact, this highly intelligent, media-savvy, like, sociopathic almost, like perfect encapsulation of actually what it is to, like, become a movie star through careful planning, right? And, like, that's what bodybuilding is, too, in, like, a really fascinating way.
There's also a scientific component of the bodybuilding that this movie seems like it would reject, but is absolutely necessary in order to cultivate a physique like this. Uh-huh.
And steroids also.
Yes.
Arnold, like, in this movie, like, represents the way that I think, like, a lot of, I can't speak to everybody, but, like, specifically, like, a lot of young men, including myself, like, at a very young age, were like, I want to start to look better. And it's like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to buy 2 dumbbells, just individual dumbbells, and every once in a while do curls with them. And
you don't have to. You don't have to subtweet me like this. This is me currently.
Look, everybody I know did it. My brother did this. I did this. Every single person was like, "Yeah, Jason in the background. He has them right there."
Yeah, it's like I'm going to go downstairs and I'm going to watch a movie and do some curls, and then I'm going to look like Kazuma Kiryu from the Yakuza.
I'm
going
to do 100 sit-ups a day. Okay, do you understand? I am fixing my shit.
This is such a Reddit ethos. I love it.
I know it is. I was just going to say. Oh, the other thing about like Arnold that should be said is that kind of like, in parallel with like this movie as like, I would say probably like the best in the genre, like, you know, separating this from something like Lord of the Rings and like other kinds of fantasy, I think that like, you know, metal as hell, sword and sorcery, like, I think this is like the unfortunate thing is like, I like that sort of stuff. As far as like movies go, there's like 3 good ones. You know what I mean?
There's almost no good ones. A lot of them are so bad.
Similarly, like Arnold, like represented such a peak for like that sort of physical, like acting, actor, bodybuilder turned movie star that like no one has even come close. Like there are people who like occupy kind of a similar lane. There was like a, you know, Jesse Ventura or like someone like The Rock kind of more recently, but like no one does it like Arnold. And it's like, no one can do it like Arnold, you know? Maybe Jason Momoa is like someone who's like,
well, yeah,
still like not there, but like someone who like I like, you know, as an actor and as a person. But like, yeah, just like the problem with like casting Arnold is like you're never gonna follow up Arnold. Like, how the fuck?
What about that new Jack Reacher guy who's just like an absolute like 9-foot fucking giant?
He is a brick shithouse. He is not sculpted. You know what I mean?
That you can see that guy in American Idol.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Literally, you can.
There's a mystique and a lack of ego to a lot of Arnie's performances that I think are like I the think separating line between it's a someone weird, like
yes. It's an otherness thing,
this
right?
With, like Jackie Chan and
his,
stuff.
His right? Austrianness is super important. Yeah. This idea that he's like a little bit like distant from he's not like in America like there's and so it's uncanny when he represents or like when he has such a canny understanding yes. of how to be a media icon, right? It's the soft bigotry of low expectations.
It is, like, his body is, like, scientific in the manner that Celia said earlier, but also, like, his career is not science. Like, it is, right? It's obviously the result of a lot of marketing and PR and, like, you know, correct fucking career moves. But it is not as transparently marketed in the same way that, like, The Rock is.
It feels or, like, genuine, even though it's not. Yeah.
Right. Like, the scenes in this movie, there are scenes in this movie where he's, like, completely shaved. He's oiled up and he's doing like dance moves to learn finesse with the sword. And it's like, I cannot imagine another actor like that doing something. So as we mentioned, like homoerotic, feminine yes. in a way, well, you know what I mean? Like he's not just the fucking it's, guy. Yeah,
and
he's also graceful at times. Right.
And to pull to your like contemporary examples of The Rock and the Jack Reacher guy and all that shit. It's like, if you saw any of them doing that, you would know that it's a very calculated marketing move that it's like, they are trying to, they've got a dozen people telling them to do this. There's like millions of dollars riding on their persona. There are brand partnerships and everything in the works. The thing, and I think Celia said it best about Arnie is like there that the Austrianness hides, and I'm going to be super ethnocentric about this, but like, you don't really know if he understands what's happening. Like, does he get what how this movie is positioning him? Does he get what's
he's
happening?
He's not speaking a lot of English at this point.
Exactly. Right. And it's like, you don't know, but then you realize 40 years of hindsight. Absolutely. Like there's a
detailed, back when he attempt. Was in Austria, he was like, yeah, I'm going to move to America, become a movie star, marry a Kennedy and get into politics. Like that was like what he said back in like the 1970s. And then he did all of those things.
He dreamed
right?
journaled.
So it's like,
yeah.
It's like he literally manifested his like perfect life because of how canny and good at that shit he is. And yet like there is still something about him that's like, oh, yeah, but does he though? Or is he just like really great and charming?
And then
it's
you like feel taken advantage dude, of. Like of course
became
he did.
A Republican governor of California, which is wild. And like, I still kind of like him. You know what I mean? It's like there's still something charming about him. It's like that seems impossible to me. But
he did it. He's the guy. He's the actual guy who did it.
The last guy to do it. The last.
Legend in three games, you know? Crazy.
I do like, Celia, more specifically how you brought up how the ending is like this sort of dethroning of previous ideas of, you know, Hollywood masculinity and like how it was somewhat amorphous. And this gave a specific, you know, Adonis shape to it all. And that would sort of color the 80s, but in a double-edged sword kind of way, they got it right the first time with Arnie, where like he had that certain affability, that certain like plausible deniability of whether or not it was like, it was known what he was doing with his persona. And then nobody else could quite match it. As everybody said, like there are examples of these movies being made for the next 10, 15 years, and none of them are like stellar. Most of them follow in their footprints until you get some. And I think like it's this movie, having seen this movie, of course, benefit of hindsight, it's this movie. And then it's like Fight Club as far as like the ideal male physique as portrayed in movies. And it's like, those are the two big ones of the last 50 years that like had an impact, and nothing else was able to really have an impact because they were very much products of their time. But this one lasted until something like Fight Club came along, you know, just like that amount of impact for one movie is fucking crazy to imagine. And it's because it was carried on the back of somebody like Arnold Schwarzenegger. I like that take about the ending. I don't think that's too big brain at all. We have just hit an hour. Cody's been doing push-ups this whole time, so I expect to fight him later on and lose.
His biceps have grown about an inch.
Yeah, he's just pushing that wheel. He's got the wheel of pain.
I've heard it's customary for people on this podcast to like challenge each other to arm wrestles and then like not document them.
No, it's appropriately. Like customary.
There have been three or four that Aaron and I have had. I've won all of them, and there's been no video evidence of it. Unfortunately,
literally not
is
true.
The problem.
I hate you
know,
so much.
There's hearsay.
For this bit.
There's telltale. But you know, ask three out of four people. And they can't remember.
They do have a video.
You haven't sent me that video. But I will hereby, as long as we're sort of, we've tracked the movie beginning to end, so much more to talk about, but so much little time. I feel like I'm the native Austrian speaker, not really doing it for you here, but I will open the junk drawer formally with the sound effect that I use for that, which is not appearing yet. There we go. With my point that, like, hey, the score is always running. This movie never does.
Dude, the score in this movie is so hard. It's crazy. Rocks.
Oh, my God.
Basil Poledouris.
That sounds like a pretty
American born, but Greek. Yes. Parents. So Jason, I knew it
because it
like
ends
to...
with IS. It's got to be fucking Greek.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, no, that
middle
rocks.
Name, I believe, was Constantine or what?
Yeah, Basil Constantine Poledouris.
You got his other credits?
Basil Constantine Poledouris.
My that's head a
did,
to that
did
guy.
RoboCop, Starship Troopers, Contra in October.
Yeah. Truly.
Holy shit.
The soundtrack to this is not on Spotify, but the soundtrack to the sequel is. That's bullshit.
That sounds, yeah.
I would love to just fucking.
I agree with Celia, by the way. Conan the Destroyer is unfortunately pretty bad. Yeah, it's a really bad movie.
I'm sure you can get a cassette tape of this score. Honestly, I might listen to
that
tape of
that's
got to
be like $900 on Discogs. Somebody is hoarding that shit.
It's like early Iron Maiden, or like you actually want the cassette tape. Shit.
Yeah,
you know I'm in a Jeep.
I just bought Donald Fagan's
Jeep. Yeah. Exactly.
Shirt off. I am 30 miles an hour over the speed limit. I have 4 tickets on my windshield.
So much chest hair that it's actually slowing down your Jeep, but you are doing it.
That's right. I
have a couple of junk drawer thoughts, but that's the one I'll lead off with. Anybody else?
I love combat in this movie. I love, first of all, like, there's way less than you would expect. There are way fewer sword fights in this movie than you would expect. And the sword fighting, if you can call it that, like, I love that Conan uses a sword like it's like a weird tool that he's never holding it or rarely holding it the way you would hold the sword. He's holding it sort of like sideways or he's sort of like smacking people with it or smashing people with it. It's like this perfect sort of like encapsulation of this idea that like weaponry is not the point of this movie. The point is like sheer physicality, right? And like I think that the like legitimately, even though the like you had said, Cody, the combat choreography is really, really simple. And not like super great to look at. It does such a good job of illustrating like what we're doing when we talk about this movie where it's just like, hey man, like this is not a movie where like Conan's not gonna fucking fence somebody, right? This isn't The Duelists or whatever. It's like Conan uses a sword because it's heavy and because it'll kill you when it connects with you. And like that's what he wants from that. And like he uses it the same way he uses an axe, the same way he would use a club, the same way he uses anything. And like that's what's important about combat here. And I really, really like that, and I think it's a really canny, smart choice for the way that combat looks in this movie.
I think this is also a very funny movie at times. I think the transition from young Arnold pushing the little wheel thing, and then, you know, all of a sudden, boom, it's just big Arnold. Very funny. Even funnier that I have not picked up until this recent viewing, which I watched it over Discord with my brother, and he pointed this out, otherwise I would have missed it. Maybe everybody else understood this very funny joke, but he's chased by wolves into, you know, the tomb, and he retrieves the sword, and then he steps out of the, you know, he steps out of the tomb with the sword, and he's like, all right, I'm going to fuck up those wolves that chased me in here. And the next shot, it just cuts to him, and he's wearing a giant pelt, like a shirt. That's a very good bit. Very
yeah,
funny.
Hell
never
yeah.
caught that. Yeah.
I did not catch that yet. My comedic moment, and I don't know if it was intended, but was like during Valeria and Conan's first love scene, they have this, you know, sort of extended romantic sexual encounter. And then they're, you know, seen like, you know, pillow talking and feeding each other food and stuff. And then there's just, without much explanation, just a shot of them both kind of looking horrified and her embracing him in this very like sort of motherly way that I assume is just meant as like, oh, we're going to cap this little sandwich of a scene with like the range of emotions that they must have shared that evening. But it makes it sound like something, it makes it look like something terrible happened between them eating and them finishing the night. That because then without words, that scene just ends and they're back in the bar and they're living their new, like very, very ostentatious lifestyle, throwing jewels around and everything. I found that very, I had to rewind that to make sure I didn't miss anything, any dialogue, because it's just all of a sudden they look very horrified. I don't know if she's like revealed some element of his backstory to her or something, but there's no clarification there. No codex for understanding that. And I found that way funnier than it would have been. Cody, Celia, any thoughts that didn't fit in a larger conversation that you want to call out, even if it's as silly as that was a funny sex scene type stuff?
The money looks like Mancala marbles. When he gives her the big jewel, I was like, it looks like they're playing Mancala. They have all these big costume jewelry stones.
I'm not familiar with Mancala.
You don't know Mancala?
Dude, it's great. I mean, we should play Mancala.
Sorry,
that's a whole this would have crashed if you knew Mancala.
This is homeschool fucking shit right
here. It's probably homeschool.
Never played.
Homeschool?
I was.
No, Jason was. We're talking
Jason
about was. Like, knowing what Mancala is normal. Yeah.
Well, you need two players, so.
Oh, you do. Yeah. Well, none of my brothers and sisters like me, and my mom didn't pay attention to me. So, yeah.
You can play Mancala.
You know, I'll ignore the girlfriend that I have downstairs and the friends that I see every day, and I'll play with my dog. What are you talking
you got to start. Listen, you got to start somewhere.
Yeah,
you do. You do.
You're going to get whooped by everybody else because I've been playing Mancala for 30 fucking years.
I believe you. This will be my frame of reference then, Celia, for when I first play Mancala as an adult. Yeah. Is that it kind of looks like the jewel. Are you talking about the jewel that he steals from, like, the snake?
So when he gives her, he's like, takes out the big jewel and gives it to her. They're on the table and they're kind of playing with all of their little jewels. And it looks like Mancala.
I'll take your word.
Fellas, if you want to know the way to a woman's heart, give her the largest jewel from your recently stolen collection.
That you put, I also love that he puts it in the top of his shirt. Like,
bra.
He has a little bib pocket. That he sewed into his pelt.
It's very good.
It rules. Yeah, it's very sweet.
Very effective thief. then I'll consider the drunk drawer a closed up. Still don't have a sound effect for our next segment, but Celia, I think we came up with this since your last episode. It's called To All the Loves We've Tried Before, where we just quickly reference movies that we've discussed that released in the same year as this one. It's 1982, because we got a big backlog, and you know, what are we doing with it if we're not making it more content? So 1982, To All the Loves We've Tried Before, we have episode 40 on The Thing. Wow, what a good episode. Made me think completely differently about that movie. Episode 115 about Pink Floyd's The Wall. That was a non-Trilon showing that we just pulled during the height of the COVID-19 pandemic, when the schedule wasn't really out and there was no in-person viewings, obviously. I think that was Aaron's suggestion.
I remember that was my suggestion. Not actually seen that movie, trying to be cute with it, you know?
I don't know if it worked. Go back and listen to episode 115 to see how we felt about that.
It's a good movie. I really like talking about it too.
I did too. The mid-COVID episodes, like the peak before vaccines and stuff, they were a strange, weird fugue state time. But go back and listen. I promise that we didn't say anything too questionable in those. Episode 142 came out of Horrorthon 5, Son of Horrorthon, which we discussed with Seth Zerati, the all-nighter at the Trilon. It was, I think, the first one back after vaccines started to get distributed. That was on Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, that released in 1982. Just one of those movies from that night. Arguably one of the highlights of that night, among a few other movies that otherwise somewhat unremarkable, unfortunately.
I'm going to have Silver Shamrock's theme song stuck in my head for the rest of the day.
I wish you hadn't said those words, actually.
288 days till Halloween. 146 saw an episode about Cody's. It's got to be Cody's favorite movie that we've probably ever discussed on this podcast. You know what I'm about to say. It's Fitzcarraldo. That movie that Cody cannot get fucking enough. I thought Cody was going to like leave the recording during that episode. You fucking hate that movie so much. You hate it even like talking about how much you hate it. You just
Fact that two of you almost gave Rashomani award to Terms of Endearment over Fitzcarraldo.
Deserved
ludicrous.
It. Deserved it.
Ludicrous.
He thinks about this to this day. And I think about episode 216 about Chan is Missing, a short little movie that was a lot of fun to discuss. I'm really glad that we covered that one. It was a one-off, I think one-off, no, two by that director.
He also did Smoke.
That's right.
Which I didn't go to see, which I feel bad about.
We didn't cover, but I am enticed to see more because that was a really fun one to go back to. And then most recently, episode 263 about Burst City with Blake Hester, our own little January freak Blake Hester, talking about a really pretty freaky 80s Japanese punk movie. Real ride that one. Check it out. Really good recent episode from us beginning of this year. And you know, until next time, 1982, we'll put you back in the drawer and we'll check you out another time. Maybe if we cover more from the series that's playing at the Trilon, which I'll give another plug to, of Swords and Sorcery here at April at the Trilon. We have one final segment that Harry needs to help me introduce. I think, Celia, you politely declined to help us introduce this segment. Has your mind changed at all in this? Have you taken control of your destiny as guest here on Trilove?
I'll let you guys take it away. You already have like your harmony.
Third time is the
we're
charm.
So good at it too.
Just come back. We'll rely on you then.
Yeah. All right, are you ready, Jason, for our final segment?
You know I'm ready.
The segment we like to call
Cody's Odies. You call that harmony?
Amazing. Somebody's got to, but thank you for that barbaric introduction. Conan the Barbarian asks the question, among other things, what is the riddle of steel? And it gives some whatever answers along the lines of, you know, oh, flesh is stronger than the steel, and so on and so forth. However, I've come to find out that the answer to this question is actually comprised of three haikus. What are those haikus? We're going to find out together through a little something I like to call Conan the Parnassian. Real stretch this week. Using my, I've got a patented spinner app, which will randomly determine the person by person order of writing a haiku one word at a time. So I'll spin the wheel. It'll land on a person. The selected person will put forth a word and we'll keep going until we have a full 5-7-5 poem times three, because you have to do three. It's the rule. And to give us a visual reference, I will drop a link to a shared doc in the chat here. That should bring us to just, yeah, kind of the space where we can see these all written out a little bit better. So I'll pull up the spinner app and we can have at it. So for our first word, and these are all the general theme of these. Again, we're here to find out what is the riddle of steel. That is the very ambiguous theme to all three of the haikus. Beyond that, y'all can take them in any direction you want, whether they're magnanimous or not. But Harry is going to give us our first word, kicking us off, and I'll futz with the formatting as we go. Nobody else here is going to get edit access. So fuck you, Aaron. Don't flood my inbox with access notifications, access request notifications. But Harry, how are we going to kick off this first Conan steel riddling haiku?
Let's go with Forge, Cody.
Forge. Look at that. We're on the board. One syllable down. The next word is going to come from, it looks like, Jason is our second. Jason, follow us up here. What's word the next one?
Word number two is going to be the.
Word number two. The. Boy, we're cooking. Look at this. This is exciting.
We're forging.
We're forging ahead as we hit Aaron. I believe that'll land on for word number three. Aaron, keep us going.
That's not a word.
Sharpened.
Look at that. All right. We've got four syllables for line one. The next word is going to come from, it looks like this will land on Celia, and I believe it did. Celia.
I'm going to go with rod.
Forge. All right. Here we go. And y'all got excellent. Mad at me for magnanimously.
Rod is appropriate. Yeah,
that was so much worse than anything, Jason.
Than anything I've seen in my life since that time. Don't fuck it up, Jason, with your next word. You're kicking off line number two of our first haiku.
Magnanimity? Bring.
Bring. What is bringing? What will bring? These are some of the questions.
Alfredo Garcia has way too many syllables.
Bring me the... Yeah, you're right.
Not.
N-O-T or K...
N-O-T.
I don't know why I had to ask.
Bring nuts. Pizza twists from Pizza Hut.
Yeah, from Little Caesars. Aaron, they don't have those, I don't think. Aaron, you're next.
Can you put the T? Or is my... Google what? Docs. Is my Google Docs freezing?
This is great podcasting.
Your Google Docs might be freezing. NOT, okay, there we that's go. It.
Forge a sharpener, bring not. I'm just going to go the. I'm going to pass functional, this one. Kick effective. That can down the road to whoever gets this one next.
Yeah. So every word is ruled out except for the. As we head, the ball is back in Harry's court. Harry, keep us a rolling.
Blunted.
Bring not the blunted. Excellent. I think we got two more syllables on this line. Still very much anybody's game as... Oh! Just barely stayed on Aaron's side. Aaron,
Bring not the blunted weapons. There we go.
Bring not the blunted weapons. Yep, I think that's 7. But I've only had 1 cup of coffee today, so anybody feel free to call me out if I'm off. But Celia's kicking off line number 3. You.
Like the word, not the letter.
Thank you. This isn't a Kelly Clarkson song. It could be. I mean, shit, we can format these however we
you
want.
You live in Minneapolis, and your first reference for the U
I know,
as
I
you
can't
is.
Believe you didn't say Prince. That was so crazy.
I don't know who that is. Harry, you're next. Your word, please.
Must.
You must what, Jason? It'll land on you eventually.
Fight.
Jason. No.
What the fuck?
What'd you say?
A world of vocabulary.
No, there's
16 million words in the English. I said fight.
You must fight.
Fight's pretty good. Sorry.
Yeah, thanks.
I thought you said point. I thought you said point, and I was like, okay, all right.
You must point that sword.
There's Celia, a direction this haiku is clearly going in.
Celia has the opportunity to drop D's or any other word that she likes. Go ahead.
You must fight. You must fight.
There's no pressure.
I'm really thinking hard about this. I'm trying to pick an.
We have 3 haikus.
This is
you
the effect.
We don't have
Aaron
to save
has.
The world with 1 haiku.
Fight
we have 3 of them.
Boldly.
There. I like that.
That's great. Actually.
There we go.
Wow.
Thanks.
Pretty good. Pretty good. Since you concluded this one, Celia, do you want to do us the honor of reading the fully completed 1st of 3 Riddle of Steel haikus?
Oh. Yes, of course. Forge the sharpened rod. Bring not the blunted weapons. You must fight boldly.
Look at that.
It's a solid haiku.
Not
Let's
bad.
Go.
It is. And we have the opportunity to harsh the first haiku's mellow with these next 2. Again, rule of 3s. Aaron, kick us off for haiku number 2.
Ooh. Let's go with wind. You know?
Wind. Yeah. Wind. Wind. Not wind. I want to make sure I get my line reading.
Not wine.
Correct.
Do not co-opt this, whoever comes next. It is wind.
It'd be very funny wind. If somebody used it to like fuck you up and make the whole haiku rhyme with wind, even though you chose wind. Just screw up the whole thing.
It'd be pretty funny. But the ball is in Harry's court now for him to futz or not futz with those meanings as he sees
I'll
fit.
Say
Harry?
On, Cody, on.
Like it, like A-N or O-N?
O-N.
O-N, sorry.
Oh, thank God.
the relieved sighs from the peanut gallery kind of sell this segment. Over to Jason. Jason, what are you going to wind on?
Your.
I've already forgotten. Is it? Why I've already forgotten. Is it wind or wind?
Confused too.
Aaron, remind us. I'll put it in like
it's wind. It's
wind. As
wind.
In the 4
Everybody
winds.
Everybody else knows this, Cody. No, Cody, it's fine.
Okay. No, I'm getting confused. This is helpful. I'm thinking about clocks.
We'll remove it for like the.
What
we won't put it in like the socials
what do
or anything.
Devil machinery have to do with the riddle of steel.
Wind, time, forging, steel takes time. It all falls
Earl
in
does
on
not
itself.
Concern
like steel.
With such mechanical.
Wind on. Oh, this is me. Wind
Celia,
on
yeah,
your
set
backside.
Wind on your backside.
Rod Excellent. Backside.
Celia's got one thing.
I don't get to use this type of vocabulary very often.
This Arnie episode is really doing something. Harry, kick up. There it is.
It's longer than it needs to be.
Arnie, give us, I don't know how many syllables that is, Arnie, so we can't put that in. So we'll go to Harry next for the first word of line 2 of haiku 2.
Horses.
Horses. Horses, not horsies. You want horses. Okay. Checking. Why is that? Oh, I think it was yellow. Harry, I think this is you again. It's back over in your space. So follow up horses with whatever comes next.
Everywhere.
Okay, Aaron, you better have your daggers out for this motherfucker because horses
Magnanimous
everywhere
is still way worse.
I just don't. This is the guy who likes writing poetry. You know, who I don't know why.
What could be more poetic than horses everywhere?
Aaron will tell us the answer to that.
Yeah, I will. Wind on your backside. Horses everywhere.
Get two more.
I feel like I need a two syllable. Yeah. Horses everywhere.
Come on, Aaron.
Around.
No, this is.
Yep.
You want
to. Are you thinking out loud or do you want to run around?
That's it.
Around.
It's not nearly as bad as magnanimous.
Magnanimous is still way worse.
Nothing will be that bad. So don't. Everything that's like not as good.
You just used seven syllables, the biggest chunk of an entire poem, on three words, and it's horses everywhere around. I will hear nothing about
magnanimous. It's painting a picture, but imagine a large step.
We're on the steps, man. Yeah, exactly. What is best in life?
You know, he's yes.
We were all thinking of steps. To be clear, all of us had that image. Okay.
We were all thinking steps, all right?
Yes.
Brother, the last line of this haiku could be pee pee poo poo poo, and it still wouldn't be as bad as magnanimous. We're going line three. First word is going to come from Harry. Harry, bring us home for our second haiku.
Steps.
Start to bring us home.
It's steps.
Steps. It is steps. And from there, who's to say? Well, I'll tell you who's to say. That is Mr. Magnanimous himself. Jason, what's next?
Wait, like steps?
Can we clarify that?
S-T-E-P-P-E-S.
Yeah, okay, so that's even worse.
Geographical formation, yes.
Why not plateau? Two syllables.
We don't get do-overs. No mulligans on this puppy.
Yeah, no do-overs. Got to be steps.
No, I'm with you, Celia. This sucks so far.
This is horrible.
This really is horrible. I had your. Never mind. Steps. Look.
Look. Whoops.
I'm trying to influence. I'm trying to be the change I want to see in the world here. I'm trying to save something.
That's good because that's what the game is. So
can I just get the dial three times in a row now? Never mind.
Is this me?
No, because it's Celia's turn. Yeah.
Like.
Oh, okay.
All right. Whoever's next has the opportunity to put D's or whatever other word. Harry, the controls have found their way into your hands. Descend.
Ooh, man, I have an opportunity to do something really funny here.
You always do. You always do.
My.
Oh, boy. All righty. The pressure is on for the person that this cursor lands on. Aaron.
Grave.
Okay.
Well, that's good.
He saved it, folks.
saved that.
Look at that. All right, Aaron, since you concluded this one, will you do us the justice of, and I put this note at the beginning so you could remind us how to pronounce the word that you
can you
put
delete
forth
the,
at the beginning.
Note now so that we have a nice, you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
Like it's contextual.
I deleted it, but your doc hasn't updated yet, so go ahead.
Okay. Wind on your backside, horses everywhere around, steps look like my grave.
Was it actually wind?
It is now, baby.
What do you mean? No, wind like blowing. Yeah, it's fine. You can delete the note. It's fine.
You know what? It's
continue. We keep it moving, Cody.
All right. Readers, when you view our tweets, the line reading will be left up to individual interpretation. We've got one final haiku here to answer the riddle of steel. Jason, kick off this final haiku for us, if you would please.
I've got two different two-syllable words in mind, and I'm going to choose flip of a coin, flip of a guitar pick.
Oh.
Prizes.
How is that going to play out? We'll find out in a few seconds as the cursor descends upon Celia's space.
Should.
Brilliant. Moving along. We're cruising. And Celia, we're sticking with you. How are you going to follow that up?
B.
Now, is that like Jerry Seinfeld B? Okay, fine.
Like Jerry Seinfeld B.
Or a contest.
My first, yeah. Oh, right. Yeah, the
sure.
contest
is probably. Don't be confused by prizes.
Yeah, we're sticking with the same two folks for this first line. Jason, you have the final word of line one, haiku three.
My word is one. Thank you.
I assume that is the spelling we want.
Needed no clarification as you got it off right on the bat.
So a way to die here is we stick with Jason for the start of line two, saving everybody else for the end. Maybe? Question mark? Who's to say? But Jason, keep us going.
By. B-Y.
B-Y. Oh, if this is... Wait, so help me out. So if this is part of the same sentence, I guess we'll figure that out. But like, do I leave it...
It's not good haiku.
No, you gotta capitalize each line.
Yep.
Really?
It belongs
to the part. Yeah, this is not some E.E. Cummings Marnus shit.
I wasn't going to say it was.
This isn't some everywhere lived in a little Howtown bullshit.
See, these two are, this haiku is theirs. They're just having this cute riffing back and forth. Aaron, save us. Let's bring us back down here.
Be one by bloodshed.
Ooh, do that. Dog, see? I knew you were an ally this whole time.
Huh? I didn't realize lines were drawn in the sand like that. Aaron, we're sticking with you. Follow up bloodshed.
And?
Peak word by word poetry writing. Harry's on the board for haiku number three. Harry, follow up bloodshed and.
Yeah, one second.
Uh-huh.
I feel like I've just sent him a text that's like, Harry, what's the worst thing you can imagine? And I'm just seeing the dot, dot, dot.
Well, I'm trying to finish it now. Like, we need one more word. We can't have fury or something.
You can do a one syllable and then the two syllable.
You have the opportunity to put D's or any other word.
Adjective. You know what I mean?
That's true.
I've already thought what I want this haiku to be through to the entire end. And there's no way I'm going to steer the ship in that direction, but it's on, you know.
I don't know, you got bloodshed.
There's a perfect five syllable line.
I'll go with awful.
Awful. By bloodshed and awful. Alright. We've got one more capper that we need. Aaron has the opportunity to manifest at least part of his destiny.
I was hoping for a one syllable. Violence is a by bloodshed and awful war. Nah, war kind of sucks.
War kind of sucks. I mean,
pain. Right. How about
what
pain?
Is it good for?
Pain.
Sure.
Pain.
Bloodshed and awful pain. We got five more syllables eligible to be occupied by words spoken and written. I was just vamping until it landed. Celia, go for it.
Trust.
Trust. Trust? Bloodshed? How can this all circle back to the riddle of steel? Harry will have more for us on that. Harry?
I'll say no.
Could I get a spelling on that?
N-O.
Just making sure. Winds, wines, you can never be too careful. Aaron, we are back to you.
One.
Can I get a spelling on that, please? No, I assume it's yes?
Yeah. Okay. O-N-E.
O-N-E. Jason, we are at you. You can either be the conclusion or ollie us up to the oop that will be the final word.
You know, I'll be a team player. I'll pass. I don't know what the pass is from, like, if I'm not close to the net and Harry is or whoever's next is. I'm going to say butt, B-U-T, one T, just one T on that butt.
All right.
Thank you.
No trust, no one but, and... That but will find us back appropriately enough with Celia. Bring us home for once and for all.
Does it have to correlate to the steel?
It can be whatever you want.
Follow your heart.
Literally whatever you want, as long as it's one syllable.
Oh, no.
Prizes should be won by bloodshed and awful pain. Trust no one, but...
The wheels are turning, and it's a wheel of pain in my mind.
If we hadn't used pain, that would have been such a good ending. Trust no one but pain. Trust no one but...
Listeners at home,
I say might?
Think about what you would put in. You could.
Might not isn't in a bug. Might with a GHD.
Sure.
We're finding like ridiculous synonyms and
try to find homonyms.
There you go.
Yeah.
Does this make sense?
It's good. Yeah.
Yeah. I like it. Yeah. Want to read this one through for us, Celia? Because you were the note we ended on for this one as well.
Oh, surely. Prizes should be won by bloodshed and awful pain. Trust no one but might.
Look at that. Look at that.
Hell yeah.
I don't know if it's too much to go through and read these all again. We did readings of these.
Yes.
Gorgeous.
Yeah. Look at that. We'll tweet those out or post it out. We'll figure some out. Might have some fun graphics, not to overstep.
You know?
Because I do not know how to
make fun
graphics.
I can't wait to see the sharpened rod.
It's going to be from the director's cut where you see Arnold's whole peen.
How do you sharpen a rod?
Yeah, you ain't. It's spoken like somebody who ain't sharpened a rod before.
It's like kind of a... blunt or you wouldn't know, kind get of rounded it. Thing.
Okay. Yeah.
Did anybody screen capture what Aaron was doing on camera?
This guy never sharpens his rod, folks.
Okay. He's
I'm gonna text Diana. Like, do you know?
Oh, that was him dying.
That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Cody, for always ending our episodes on such a wonderfully happy note. I'm really glad to see that the haikus minigame came back. The haikus notey came back. It's always a fun time, this time with a guest. Speaking of which, thank you so much, Celia, for being on our show yet again. We hope that you'll reach out in about another episode or that we can do the same. But until then, where should people find you, and where do you want them to find you, and should they find you, and where at?
deeperintomovies.substack.com is where most of my writing is. I'm not really using anything else at this point.
Cool.
So go there.
Then you'll find a link to Deeper Into Movies, the Substack that Celia creates, on our show notes just below and on Twitter.
It's really good. Check it out.
It's fantastic. Sometimes, I believe you have written about Footloose there before. Have you written about Conan there before?
Conan has not come up. It's I think my audience is not, I've written about Predator.
Okay. Okay.
But Arnold has not been a main feature of the Substack.
Well, you've set the stage now, you know, you got some fertile ground. So maybe we'll see it there, but, keep an eye on Deeper Into Movies, the Substack that Celia creates, link in the show notes. Keep an eye on the Trilon schedule, for movies that we're probably going to end up covering. We try to follow their schedule wherever possible. Go to Trilon.org for that. Go to Trilon Cinema on any social media where you'll find them. Where you can keep up with them and tweet at them. Check out Perisphere. It's a blog that former guest Finn Odom has been editor of for a little while and contributes to occasionally. They're looking for writers as well. They're looking for contributions and submissions. So if you're interested in any of the movies that the Trilon is going to be playing, get in touch with them. And if you like writing about them, see if you can get your byline on that puppy. You can find that information in the show notes and on our Twitter. That's probably enough plugs from me. My name is Jason Daphnis. I really appreciate you listening, and I really appreciate Celia for being on. You can find us on, well, me, not some sort of godhead over here, me, on Twitter at Nintendoofus.
Thank you, Godhead Jason, and thank you, Celia, for being here this week. I've been Cody Narveson. You can find me on Blue Sky at Cody Narveson and Twitter at Cody_BH.
Yeah, thanks. That was great. I've been Harry Mack, and you can find me on Twitter at PunishTake.
My name is Aaron. You can find me on Twitter at @ArbyPlease.
Snakes. Why did it have to be snakes?